Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Richard Friedman with the Appellate Section of the Criminal Division. The foundation of the government's argument has already been decided by the Supreme Court. First, Wheeler decided that there is nothing inconsistent with the dependent status of the tribes for them to prosecute members of their own tribes as an exercise of tribal sovereign power. Second, Wheeler also decided that the double jeopardy principle of dual sovereignty applied when a tribe prosecuted its own members as an exercise of tribal sovereignty, even though it did so at the complete sufferance of Congress. And third, in cases such as Sandoval and John, the Supreme Court decided that a federal government may recognize a tribe and deal with it on an equal footing with other recognized tribes, even though there has been an historic interruption in federal recognition.
Well, is it that was interrupted? I thought Congress, at a minimum, deprived the Menominee of jurisdiction over criminal matters for that period of years.
They did more than that. They withdrew federal recognition and declared that as of the Secretary of the Interior's declaration in 1961 that the property transfer had been completed, Congress declared that members of the Menominee tribe shall not be considered as Indians for purposes of any federal law or program applying particularly to Indians. So it most definitely withdrew the tribe's authority to exercise its sovereign power to prosecute members of its own tribe, in cases of this nature, most certainly.
Do you think Congress can just create tribes?
No. Sandoval established the limiting principle. With respect to communities that Sandoval referred to as distinctly Indian communities, Congress has a broad discretion. It's subject to a rational basis review. I believe it was in Baker against Carr when the Supreme Court was discussing the political question doctrine that it referred to Sandoval as an instance where it was primarily a political question how Congress recognized Indian tribes, but it was subject to judicial review for its rational basis.
So, for example, you don't think Congress could look at some small community of German speakers in the middle of Texas and decide that they're going to now have dependent sovereign status along the same lines as the Indian tribe?
Congress could not do so. One must bear in mind the history of the sovereign status of Indian tribes before the United States exerted its overriding sovereignty upon them. It has often been described as a unique and particularly historically based status. And so what we are arguing here only deals with the status of the American Indian tribes. Without further questions, I'll reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Friedman. Mr. Mullins?
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Brian Mullins. I represent the appellee in this case, Frank Long. I want to emphasize that this is the case that Wheeler did not decide. This is the case where Congress...
Forgetting Wheeler for a moment. Is it your view that Congress could have used a different form of words when it withdrew recognition from the nominee so that later it could restore their sovereign status?
It is my view that Congress could have chosen different words.
So it just chose the wrong words.
Correct.
To do that deliberately or is it a slip?
I think Congress can recognize inherent authority when it
wants. I mean, is there some evidence that they, they deliberated over this issue and decided, yes, they wanted it to be irrevocable, so they chose this form of words rather than another form of words?
Well, I think the evidence is in the Indian Civil Rights Act, where Congress recognized the tribe's ability to try non-tribal members, and it recognized that that is an inherent authority. Here, Congress did not recognize that the authority it was giving back was inherent, necessarily. So I think the evidence is that Congress has passed a law recognizing inherent authority. It did not use that language in the Restoration Act, though.
In your view, does that mean that tribal prosecutions are now themselves unconstitutional?
No, not at all.
I don't see how, if in your view what's happened is that Congress has treated the tribe as some kind of private club, the tribal prosecutions could be valid. I mean, Congress can't delegate criminal prosecutorial authority to the Union League Club.
Our view is simply that the source of the tribe's current ability to prosecute is the Restoration Act. And that's what we...
But that can't be. If the source of the tribe's authority to prosecute is some delegation from Congress, then the tribe has no such authority. Because the only people who can receive delegations from Congress to wage criminal prosecutions are Article II officers of the United States, appointed by the President and confirmed by the Senate. Right, putting to one side Morrison against Olson and the question whether courts can appoint inferior officers, nobody who's prosecuting these people on behalf of the tribe has been appointed by the President or is an officer of the United States. The tribe doesn't use grand juries. So if this is all some kind of delegation of federal power, the tribe's criminal prosecution is unconstitutional root and branch. Is that your position?
No, that is not our position.
But if that's not your position, it must be the tribe's prosecutions are not delegated federal power. They're something else.
We're just relying on the distinction that the Supreme Court made in Wheeler between inherent authority and delegated authority.
Exactly. If it's delegated authority, it's unconstitutional. You tell me it's not unconstitutional, so it's not delegated authority, then it must be inherent authority.
I don't believe it is unconstitutional. I think Congress has the plenary power to give tribes any authority that Congress chooses.
Congress can give tribes the power to bring criminal prosecutions without an Article II officer, without supervision of the President, without grand juries. What's happened to the Constitution?
Because of the quasi-sovereign status of Indian tribes.
But as soon as you tell me Indian tribes are different, we're back in Wheeler again.
But Wheeler does make that distinction, and I think that's what this case turns on, is the distinction. And also, this is the case that Wheeler did not decide where a tribe had lost its power. The Navajos had never lost their power to prosecute. The Menominees didn't lose their
power. Is there any point to your position? Does your position serve any purpose, or is it just... some technicality here.
Well, our position is
Congress tripped over.
From Frank Long's perspective, he is the only person in Wisconsin, only members of the Menominee tribe could be prosecuted for a simple crime like theft.
That's not true at all. Any person in the state of Wisconsin outside the Indian reservations could be prosecuted both by the state of Wisconsin and by the federal government. So they're all subject to even more dual prosecution than the members of the tribe because of the cap on liability, the cap on punishment.
Correct, but I think for a simple crime like theft, I think it's important to remember what this crime entailed. Frank
Wisconsin Long prohibits theft, the last I checked.
But then the federal government wouldn't have jurisdiction over a state prosecution.
Don't know. I mean, if there were the use of the mails or telephone wires were involved, it very well might.
At least in this specific case where a 19-year-old man stole a truck, drove it 600 feet, crashed it. The state of Wisconsin would have jurisdiction over that. I don't think there's any question that the federal government would not.
You think the state of Wisconsin could have brought a criminal prosecution here?
No, they cannot because...
Why not?
Because they do not have jurisdiction over tribal crimes.
Oh, wait. Your view is that this is not a tribal crime anymore, that the tribe is just some private club exercising delegated federal power. If the Menominees are really an arm of the federal government for this purpose, then the dual sovereign is the state of Wisconsin. I don't see how the federal government, if this is not a real Indian tribe anymore, exercising, you know, aboriginal authority, I don't see how the state could be blocked from prosecuting.
Our
no federal power to knock out state prosecution, except if it's a real Indian tribe.
Our view is that it is an Indian tribe, but simply that the source of its current prosecutorial powers is derived from Congress rather than from any inherent authority it has.
Could Congress pass a new law that would eliminate... I was unclear whether you thought the original statute that withdrew recognition was it, and it could never be restored, or whether you thought Congress had just blown it in the Restoration Act and could now pass a new statute, not applicable to your client, but for the future.
Congress could tomorrow claim that the authority the tribes have is inherent, I suppose.
Well, wait a second. Your suppose is a bit of a...
How would that be different from Congress restoration?
I don't understand.
I don't believe Congress can create something that wasn't...
So there's nothing Congress can do. This is forever.
Correct.
Because of the way the statute withdrawing recognition was worded, not because of the Restoration Act.
Because the tribe was terminated.
And
right, because of what happened back, what, in the
1954.
Yeah. So that was it.
That was
irrevocable. Even though Congress wasn't focused on this issue at all.
Well, Congress was focused on assimilating the tribe into the larger society.
They weren't thinking about the dual sovereignty issue.
No, and I think allowing the tribe to maintain a separate prosecution would have been antithetical to what Congress was attempting to achieve by the termination policy. That was the whole idea of the termination policy, was to assimilate the tribe into the larger society. And so the tribe just
became... This is one of these unusual cases where you're arguing a Congress can bind a subsequent Congress.
I believe that is true.
But there's a lot of Supreme Court authority that says it's not true.
Well, I do believe also that the 1973 Congress that restored the tribe could have said it was restoring the tribe's prosecutorial powers and that those powers were inherent. Congress could have done that in 1973, but it didn't.
That's a phrasing issue. I had wondered if 2 days after they had passed the Menominee Termination Act, somebody in Congress had woken up and said, oh my goodness, you know, we didn't mean to do this much. We blew it. It seems to be your view that it was such an irrevocable act, you know, that once broken, it could never be put back together again. And true, it was a longer period of time, but why is it your view that Congress can't revisit legislation like that?
Well, perhaps my view is that Congress could have, but it did not hear.
No, you just said it couldn't.
Well, I do believe Congress could have in 1973 said that the authority it was giving the tribe was inherent. Now, whether that is truly inherent is another question, I think, because that would essentially be rewriting history and saying that Congress...
So why do you say they can do it? I mean, what you're saying is they could say anything they want, but wouldn't have any legal force.
Well, I think the important thing is that Congress did not say it here. And the fact is that for those...
But it wouldn't make any difference if it had. That's equally important.
Oh, it'd probably be an issue for litigation.
And I didn't think you responded to the government, but there are innumerable instances in which look at the Confederates, something like that. States are conquered, territories are conquered. We conquered Germany and Japan and take over their government. In the case of Japan, for example, force them to adopt a constitution that we had drafted for them. Does that mean that all these countries and so on are operating as delegates of the United States because there was a period in which we dominated them and terminated their sovereignty? I mean, certainly the sovereignty of Germany was terminated at the end of World War II.
Well, I think the difference is that our government has not continued its power over these foreign nations, whereas the government's power over the Indian tribes continues and will continue forever due to the Indian Commerce Clause. And there is no such concomitant Indian Commerce Clause with respect to foreign nations. And I think that's the distinction between Congress recognizing an authority or a power of the Menominees versus Congress recognizing that Germany is a sovereign country.
Their governments were, you know, taken on military governments, and then they were restored and got their representation in Congress back. But of course, obviously, Congress retains a lot of power over states by virtue of the regular Commerce Clause.
And that's exactly, I think, the distinction. States are different than tribes. Congress cannot terminate a state. A state can withdraw from the Union, I suppose, as the Confederates did, but Congress cannot terminate
through that. The Civil War was about.
Yeah. We went through that. The answer is no.
But Congress cannot terminate a state, and the states, I don't think, the tribes are not on the same level as a state. And the states created the federal government.
But what's the difference? After the Civil War, in 1877, I guess, Congress restored full sovereignty to the states. just the way it restored full sovereignty or some quasi-sovereignty to the Menominee. So what's the difference?
Well, again, Congress does not retain that power over the states that it retains over the tribes.
But Congress has a lot of power over that, actually. Yeah.
The premise was that the states had never actually withdrawn, but that they couldn't do anything until they ratified the 14th, 13th, and 14th Amendments. They weren't given suffrage in Congress until then. And conditions were placed on their exercising statedom, and there was, of course, a military occupation government in the southern states for an extended period.
But the states retain all of the powers that are not...
No, the states didn't retain it. That was the reason why the 14th Amendment exists.
I guess I would refer to the 10th Amendment, and the states retain the powers that the federal government does not have under the Constitution, whereas the tribes have no such
ability. But the problem with your position is the fundamental problem that Congress can't make changes in status from time to time with respect to these entities. I should imagine, for example, that right now, if it wanted to grant Puerto Rico total independence, it could do so, and if at some later time Puerto Rico wanted to apply to become a state, it could also do that. And I don't see why from time to time these kinds of modifications of status, either for more association, less association, more domination, less, are outside the power of Congress. And I think that's the fundamental point.
I believe they're within the power of Congress. The question is, what is the source now of the tribe's power? And we are not disputing that the tribe has this power. There's no question about that. The only question is the source, and that's why this case is very narrow.
So suppose Alaska brings a criminal prosecution, and it's then followed by a federal prosecution. Would you say that since Alaska used to be completely subordinate to the federal government, used to be a territory, and it was constituted as a state in 1958, that doesn't count because it was at one time in the same supine subordinate position as the Menominees were?
Correct, because Alaska was admitted on an equal footing, and all of the states are admitted on an equal footing.
So why don't we say the same thing about the Menominees? When the Menominees are reconstituted as a tribe, they're reconstituted on an equal footing with the Navajos.
But I don't believe there is an equal footing doctrine that's relevant to the Menominee tribe. And Congress could have done that, but it didn't. And I think that's the distinction between any state that's admitted into the Union at a later date and the tribes today. So,
okay.
Thank you. We ask that the court affirm the district court.
All right. Mr. Friedman, do you have anything further?
Has the court further questions?
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel.